Hello there, it's me again. My name is Lee Giroux, and I know that most people who have 15 minutes to spare spend it with someone who hasn't. But seriously, I do hope you have time to spare, 15 minutes at least, and share it with me as I bring you Jackson's stories for the family. The stories are all personality portraits, and Jackson's is Northern California's most outstanding home furnishing store and has been for more than 58 years. Portrait number one. At a Hollywood gathering, Ilka Chase, the famous authoress whose pen often irks the gentler sex, encountered an actress noted for her feline tendencies, cat to you. I enjoyed your last book ever so much, Miss Chase. Who wrote it for you? Thank you, said Ilka sweetly. Who read it to you? Meow. Portrait number two deals with a man who owned a hot dog stand. Musing aloud, he said, I wish I had Rockefeller's money. Then I'd be richer than Rockefeller. Of course, you're going to ask me how he figured that out, and I'm going to tell you. It's simple. If he had as much money as Rockefeller, he'd be as rich as he is, and he'd have his hot dog stand to boot. See? Portrait number three. A man, Otto Clare, a Hammond organ, and a song. I love you for sentimental reasons. I love you for sentimental reasons. Well, I guess that all love has sentiment connected with it, and that brings us to Jackson's personality portrait number four. It spotlights Houdini, the famous magician who employed many deft artifices to foster the romantic element in his marriage. On occasion, with an air of portentous confession, he would remark to his wife, Mrs. Houdini, you are a modern woman of liberal ideas, and I know that you'll not be angry if I keep a date this evening. So I expect to meet the most beautiful woman in the world at the corner of 52nd and Broadway at exactly 6:30, and I shall be home very late. Well, now, this would be Mrs. Houdini's cue to dress herself up in her best frills and keep that date. Houdini would pick her up with a great flourish of gallantry and whisk her off to the best nightclubs. And with an air of mystery, he would procure a private dining room and entertain his wife with a most wonderful champagne dinner. Ah, yes. Isn't that romantic? How about you, lady? Does your husband do nice little things like that for you? You know, I honestly believe that most men lose sight of the fact that the little woman would like to be the recipient of a few kindnesses once in a while. Something that would be reminiscent of the days when you were courting her. Remember those days? Ah, come on, loosen up, guys, and surprise the light of your life with a little romantic flourish that will remind her of how much she means to you. And by the way, gentlemen, you'll feel pretty good about it yourself. Never mind writing in to thank me, ladies. It's all right. Just get the old boy to follow through, and I'll be satisfied. Well, now, here's a personality portrait of a man you very probably have never heard of. But to many of us, he is one of the greatest educators in the history of the deep subject of philosophy. As a matter of fact, he taught philosophy at Harvard University for a good many years. His name is George Santayana, and he has always held his classes spellbound with the beauty of his speech. He was an ambulatory sort of lecturer. He wandered around the room and used pauses in his stride to punctuate his speaking. Joseph Ostlander, who was a former Harvard student himself, tells of one beautiful spring morning when in the course of his lecture, Santayana went often to the window, looked out among a disturbing yellow of a hedge of forsythia. Finally, he paused for a long time, much longer than ever before, while a large class in the lecture hall sat with pencils poised, ready to take down his next words. At last, he turned to the class and said, "Gentlemen, I very much fear that last sentence will never be completed. You see, I have an appointment with April." And he walked out of the room. He's been keeping his appointment with April ever since, for he never lectured regularly again. Boy, that must be a wonderful feeling, to be able to turn your back on all the cares and woes of the world. You know, it seems to me that the happiest people in the world are the ones who have done just that. Turned their backs on all of life's little struggles and spent the rest of their earthly existence doing exactly what they wanted to do simply because they wanted to do it. Well, right now I'm going to do exactly what I want to do, talk about Jackson's. Well, needless to say, Mr. Sponsor, this is an ideal place for your commercial message and a very ideal tie-in, so to speak. And now, Otto Clare plays Falling in Love with Love, after which I'll be back with a personality portrait you'll never forget. Now for the unforgettable personality portrait I promised you. This episode took place several years ago in a small Kansas town. One of the local boys, known to his friends as the Kansas Kid, was scheduled to fight an Eastern Pug Ugly by the name of Mike Kelly on a certain Tuesday night. Well, now it wouldn't seem unusual for any Kansas Kid, Texas Kid, or any other kind of a small town fighter to get his chance to battle a real seasoned brawler in his own hometown, but this Kansas Kid was different. He wasn't the ordinary run-of-the-mill type of backroom brawler. He was just the opposite. He was a handsome, serious-minded young man who sang in a church choir on Sundays, helped his dad with the chores on the farm, was high in his studies in the local high school, a quiet string bean that kept in condition by walking 10 miles a day to and from school. And, of course, his heavy duties around the farm kept his arms and hands as strong as steel. With his intelligence and a magnificent physique, he was able to literally whip his weight in Wildcats. Well, at least he could lick any man his size in the whole of Kansas. So it was only natural that a smart manager should come along and show the kid how to pick up a little fast money to help him further his education later on. Well, the kid needed money. His father's farm barely provided the necessities for a large family, and if the kid wished to go to college, he'd have to provide his own funds. And so we come to that fateful Tuesday night in the crowded, smoke-filled opera house of this small Kansas town. Of course, all the town's population was on hand to see the Kansas kid whip this mug from the east. Well, now this Mike Kelly was a tough-looking hombre, a short, squat fellow with a bull neck and a mashed nose. Apparently, he didn't have a national reputation, however, this Kelly, because none of the crowd had ever heard of him. But he was young, strong, and he looked like a seasoned fighter. Well, at the end of round five of a fast but not too bruising battle, it was obvious to the prejudiced crowd that the bum from the east could flatten their pride and joy, the Kansas kid, any time he should choose. However, in round six, seven, eight, nine, and ten, Mike Kelly hit the Kansas kid with only enough to assure him, Kelly, a decision. After the fight, as the spectators left the hall, one question was on everyone's lips. Why did Kelly carry the Kansas kid? Why? He didn't have to. He could have KO'd Kelly. He could have KO'd him any time he wanted to after the fifth round. But for the answer, let's drop back to the Kansas kid's dressing room. Kelly is already dressed for the street, and the kid is sitting on his dressing table, looking like he was about ready to cry. And as you get closer to Kelly, he doesn't look so tough after all. He has a very kind, intelligent look in his blue eyes. And he walks up to the kid and says, "Don't take it so hard, Kansas. I don't think you want to be a professional fighter anyhow. And now is as good a time as any to find out that you're not so tough outside of your own county. You really don't want to be a pug, do you, kid?" The Kansas string bean felt a smile crease his swollen lips, and he looked up into the eyes of this tough-looking guy with a refined voice and said, No, I don't want to be a fighter. I want to study hard and get an appointment to West Point. And fighting seemed like an easy way to earn some quick money so I could have more time to study. And Kelly answered by saying, "I know what you mean, kid. I'm not going to follow this fight racket myself. I do this during the summer, but just to earn enough money to go to Notre Dame in the fall. Believe me, Kansas, don't lose sight of your ambition. West Point and the Army offers a wonderful career, and I know you'll make it. Oh, and by the way, my real name isn't Mike Kelly. It's Rockney, Canute Rockney. What's yours?" The Kansas kid shook hands warmly with his newfound friend and answered, "My name's Eisenhower, Dwight D. Eisenhower." Well, that was Jackson's personality portrait to remember, and now for the poem to remember. It's Advice to a Tot About to Learn the Alphabet by Phyllis McGinley. Consider, child, be prudent, rash infant, not so fast. Oh, stay, my dimpled student, unlettered to the last. Unless you leap before you look, your fate will be a trite one. For first you'll learn to read a book, and then you'll want to write one. The Pulitzers, the Guggenheims, will rank you with the winners. You'll print a play, compose some rhymes, and be reviewed in the Sunday Times, and get invited for your crimes to literary dinners. You'll be a guest of honor on a hard gold chair with your name upon the menu just below the bill of fare. And you'll sing for your supper while the lesser authors pout, for the culture clubs will get you if you don't watch out. Well, time's all gone and we have to leave. So until we meet again with Jackson Stories for the Family, this is Lee Giroux saying, horse sense is the thing a horse has that keeps him from betting on people. Goodbye now. This is ABC, the American Broadcasting Company.